Hello, this is Jada Bussey Jones, the past president of the Society of General Internal Medicine and the host of SJIM's President's Podcast. We engage SJIM's former presidents who are leaders across healthcare, public health, policy, and academia. As we lead up to the organization's 50th anniversary, we hope to capture insights from our national thought leaders so that our organization, our members, and healthcare and the community broadly are in a stronger position to grow, innovate, and meet the challenges of our time. So to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Today, I'm delighted to talk with my friend and colleague, Dr. Leroy Hicks, who is the president for the Wilmington campus of Christiana Care and is a past president, of course, for SJIM. Dr. Hicks graduated from Howard University with a bachelor's degree in 1991 and completed his MD at the Indiana University School of Medicine. He later completed a fellowship in general medicine and faculty development at Brigham and Women's Hospital and earned a master's of public health degree from Harvard School of Public Health. Dr. Hicks exemplifies healthcare leadership. He has had roles ranging from chief of hospital medicine, division director, vice chair, chair, executive director, chief medical officer, and for all of these efforts, he's been recognized with numerous clinical and research awards, including the Charles J. Harrington Award for Distinguished Service for Visionary Leadership and a mastership award bestowed by the American College of Physicians. This is one of the highest honors in internal medicine. In addition to being nationally known as a clinical system leader for growth and high quality care, he's also known for his research and work in health equity. So, Leroy, thank you so much for all of your years of work, and thank you for agreeing to be here to chat with me today. I'm going to start off with, I hope, a very easy question, which is telling me a little bit about yourself. Before you started in this illustrious career, I would love to hear a little bit about who you are, your background, and really how you started on this leadership journey. I'm curious about whether you had leadership in your vision or whether it was something that happened. But first, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, thank you, Jada. First, it's such a pleasure to have the opportunity for you and I to always connect, which is great, and an opportunity to talk to our members here at SJIM. To be honest with you, I have always felt a need to do everything I can to make sure that people didn't end up as I did at 20 years old. And I think I've mentioned the story a few times. It was the end of my junior year of college when I lost my father somewhat prematurely to end-stage heart disease. My father died about 6 weeks before I actually took my MCATs. And it was at that point, I had always intended to be a doctor, but it was at that point I really began to understand the differential impact of being Black and growing up without a lot of resources, what that meant to my family, the community I was a part of. And I felt a calling to serve and do all that I can to make sure that other children didn't experience that same loss that early on, and that I should do all that I can to alleviate the burden of inadequate health care on the communities that were similar to mine. And so I didn't intend on becoming a leader. My intentions were always to work as hard as I could to be an excellent physician, because I thought that the people that I wanted to serve deserved that. And through that pretty consistent pursuit of being better, I was blessed to have a number of opportunities. And each time I ended up really weighing whether or not it would continue to lead me toward my true north. And that's sort of how I ended up doing so many different things and ended up where I am now.
I really appreciate your story of personal loss and how it led you to thinking about your career, both as a clinician, but also as a leader. And so it sounds like you found that leadership has allowed you to kind of be even more effective in those initial goals that you had. So that is really fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Can you talk a little bit about why general internal medicine as a career specifically? Was that something that you also envisioned yourself as doing when you thought about being a doctor?
Not initially. It's interesting. I suffer a bit from eclecticism, Jada, or people that know me well would just say I'm confused. I like everything. And frankly, when I was first applying for school, I was being interviewed for MD-PhD programs because I thought I was going to be a basic scientist who focused on organ rejection, solid organ rejections, and some disparities between blacks and whites in those rates. That was probably throughout the early part of my college experience. When I first got to medical school, it was my intent to actually become a pediatrician, of all things, because they were the only doctors I knew. And in our city, the only black physician I knew was a pediatrician. And so that's what I thought I would. I became interested in just about every rotation I did throughout the first half of my third year in medical school. But it was really my first attending on the inpatient service in internal medicine that piqued my interest the most. And then I realized that this man who spent time both on the ambulatory side and rounding with residents was perhaps the smartest attending I had a chance to work with. He seemingly knew a little bit about everything. And the diversity of his career, the respect I have for his knowledge base as an internist really spoke to me. So that's what led me to be a general internist. And the reason I stayed primarily focused on general internal medicine and really never contemplated a subspecialty was because as I thought about all the ways that I might contribute most to improving health across the population, and then more specifically, kind of raising the tide, maybe differentially for those who are disproportionately suffering, being a generalist made the most sense. Seemed to be most aligned with my mission. So from the age of, say, 25 years old, it's all I've ever wanted to be.
That is so awesome. I think in some ways, I have a very similar journey. In my high school yearbook, it said pediatrician. But unlike you, I did not have any models for general internal medicine. And I've talked to, obviously, a lot of our past presidents. We trained in a time where not only there was lack of exposure to general internal medicine, but it was kind of actively dissuaded. I mean, all of my inpatient ward weeks were with cardiologists and neurologists and other things. And so to your point about the smartest people were thought to not do general internal medicine. So, but fortunately, when I trained, I was able to get some of that exposure. And I really appreciate your journey. It's informative. So that brings me, you picked a career in general medicine, it sounds like very early on. How did you find SGIM? And why did you join? What's been sort of your relationship before the presidency with the organization?
Yeah, SJM has always been the place I felt most at home, right? As someone who, I don't know, had scholarly inclinations. I think when I, quick story, when I went to medical school, right, I went back to my home state because it was the most affordable option for me. But I also was concerned I wouldn't be able to pay for it, even the amount that was due. I was a Pell Grant kid in college and worked two jobs to make my way through undergrad. You can't really do that in medical school. And so I became a National Service Corps scholar. And during my residency, I think it was the second year or my first year as a resident, my PGY2 year, I realized I was really interested in leveraging an evidence base in my practice as a trainee. I found that the first opportunities I had really to teach interns, I got a great deal of enjoyment out of bringing the literature into practice and really working with the trainees, the medical students at Harvard Medical School and the residents. And while I was doing that, I began to realize that there wasn't much information or evidence about how clinical practice influences disparity in outcome. I'm old enough that at that point, much of the work that focused on racial and ethnic disparities was focused on biological mediators or proposed biological mediators and not practice differences. And when I began doing a more and more investigation, and I would say this is a key lesson for the young internist, I found that that gap was something that I was most interested in doing. And so I began to think, if I were to practice as initially planned in an urban, fairly qualified community health center, right, which I knew would fulfill some of my zeal, I might be missing an opportunity to make a major contribution targeting something that I was sure, based on my personal experiences, influenced the outcomes for my community. So at that time, unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, there was something called the NRSA or NRSA option to pay back the National Service Corps obligation. And so I looked up. There was no internet, right? Or it was nascent at that time. As much as I can, as many papers as I can from the people that tended to look at differences in care and how it might be related to outcomes, not necessarily racial disparities, but I knew they'd be thoughtful. And I found a few mentors. One of them was in my own backyard at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Another one, Dr. Neil Poe, was at Johns Hopkins University. And so I emailed them, began to have discussions. And I think, Jada, it was from those discussions I decided that I really would benefit from research training. And I, in those initial conversations, first heard about the Society of General Internal Medicine. It was the only place when I would hear them and other leaders in the field at the time, it was the only place where they tended to be able to ply their trade and find that there were people with common interests. And that I began to realize was, I think, a common pathway for many of us who got involved at that time. The first SGIM meeting I attended happened to be in Boston, and it was during my first year of fellowship. And not only was I encouraged to see posters and oral presentations by people that were like-minded, I also was fortunate in that there were a cadre of people around my same phase in the career who looked like me, quite frankly, as well. And that was unique, really rare in Boston. So it was nice to see it in the organization.
That is perfect. And it's a story that we keep hearing about mentorship leading you to the organization, but this idea of like-mindedness, similar careers, and even similar backgrounds that sort of kept you coming back. And that is really helpful. I want to ask you a question as we approach the organization's 50th anniversary. It's been really interesting to get reflections from our past leaders. And so I want to offer an opportunity for you to offer up any reflections or thoughts that you want to share. If you have any advice for the organization, either its current or future leaders, as we're thinking about the next 50 years, what would that be?
I think my initial response is that it's time to re-examine. And this has happened pretty recently over the last few years, but I think the cycle needs to be accelerated. The return on investment for this generation that is currently going through residency and fellowship, right? So, Jada, at one point, I hate generational labels, but for the sake of discussion, I'll say I'm Generation X. And I comprise probably 60% about 5 or 6 years ago of the academic workforce in my hospital and in my health system. My generation is becoming diminishingly smaller, appropriately so, as we bring in more fellows and more young faculty members, internists in other disciplines. But they're also in a time that I think we face unprecedented challenges. We face them in healthcare broadly. We face them very specifically as doctors, broadly and across disciplines, and in the world of general internal medicine and in academic medicine, we have very, very specific challenges that this generation is going to deal with, not just currently, but for years to come. And SGIM, we need to continue to be a home for those individuals that meets their needs. My needs have been met largely, right? I've been very, very fortunate. I've had a lot of success, and SGIM has played a key part of that. But I want the person that is 25 years younger than me, who is the excellent young scholar internist, to reap the same benefits that I did from SGIM. And I think we need them to inform us as to the best ways to achieve that goal. So I would love to see us continue down this road, right, of assessing what our members need at different stages of their careers, and for us to continue to develop programming as senior leaders in the organization, past presidents, council members, to continue to evolve along with the evolving needs of the general internist, particularly in these challenging times.
I love that. And I'm going to just build on that question a little bit and sort of not just as an SJIM leader or past leader, but your role as sort of a health system leader. You mentioned several challenges and opportunities. And so do you want to build on or talk specifically about any challenges or opportunities that there might be moving forward for those of us in the healthcare space?
Oh, there are numerous ones. You know, it's a little, so we're going to talk a little bit, Jada, about how much of a nerd I am. Okay. That there aren't many nerds within academic general internal medicine, but when I was growing up, it wasn't cool to be a comic book fan. I'm an enormous comic book fan and have been in the superhero since like the early 1970s. Turns out my daughters, you've met my kids. My daughters, one's 20, one's 22. It's cool to be a nerd now, apparently. It wasn't when I was their age. The early 2010s, there was a series of comic books by an author named Jonathan Hickman. And what he talked about in those series of comics, the theme was the Avengers, which is the really premier superhero group, if you know anything about the comics. Jada, they had to grow bigger. They had to gain new membership because what they faced were unprecedented threats and challenges that seemed to accelerate and then come from every direction. And that's how I feel right now about what we're facing. Those of us who care about increasing life expectancy and improving health-related quality of life for the people that we serve, right, our communities, I see not only unprecedented challenges now, but I fear that the threats are just beginning. And it's coming from every direction, right? So there right now are about 13 states, for instance, that have considered legislation that prevents faculty members from their state-funded institutions from participating in activities with societies that are deemed as politically motivated or counter to the current administration's executive orders. Think about what that means for an organization like SJIM and the many young fellows or trainees or faculty members at places like University of Kentucky or numerous other places that now are challenged in terms of their ability to get funding to do the very work that is part of our core mission or participate in our core mission. That is not something that is easily going to go away. That's why we have to think about how to make ourselves available when their resources are constrained. There are, I think you and I both know, many, many SJIM members who have been part of the United States Preventative Task Force. Many of them are our friends. We know them to be not only exceptional physicians, researchers, and scholars, but people that care significantly and quite meaningfully about the populations we serve, right? They just want to do the right thing. And we know that there are significant threats to the ability of those very, very smart people to take what they know, what they can discern in their judgments about what should be covered and not covered and paid for. There are legitimate threats to the body of the USPTF and who sits on it and who may sit on it in the future. I fear that. We've already seen this happen with vaccinations, right? And the advisory panel for vaccinations here in the US, our Secretary of Health and Human Services has made some really significant changes to the body that traditionally looks at the evidence base and makes recommendations. And I'm fearful that will happen, not just when it comes to vaccines, which is already problematic, but across the board. And all of these things, and we've not begun to talk about loss of payer status for patients who are on the margins, right? We're predicting in my home state in Delaware, 11,000 people will become uninsured just as a consequence of losing the ACA subsidies. And we've not even begun to think about what will happen in 2027 as people come off of Medicaid. I run a safety net campus, a hospital and several clinics that serve a disproportionately Medicaid population. So I look forward to seeing now increases in patients who have target organ damage from things that were preventable, right, with appropriate access to ambulatory care. It almost feels as I'm talking about this, like the challenges are not only immense, but overwhelming. But this is where I go back to the analogy about the Avengers. We have to have superheroes and we need a larger army of them. We've got to get bigger. We've got to get more efficient. We've got to get stronger. So if SJIM can find its place, right, in developing many more Jada Boosie Jones of the world, right? And Dr. Hicks's, and the list goes on and on and on of really zealous, highly qualified, highly skilled SJIM members. If we can grow, I think we have the potential to be a really major resistant force at a time where it's really needed.
It absolutely does. And you have really done a great job of talking about these big, hairy problems that are coming from all directions, but still giving a message of hope and resilience and sort of thinking about the future. But I'm wondering, as we're thinking about these big, heavy problems and trying to kind of move forward, I'm wondering what keeps you well. You're clearly very busy as an individual leader and a clinician. And so I'd love to hear about some of your hobbies, what you do for self-care. Is it still the Avengers and comic books and other things? But what do you do to stay well?
Yeah, a look around my office, which you can't quite see, is numerous novelty items, statues, a bunch of stuff. I have an obsession with the Black superhero. And so I have all of that kind of, so I read avidly still. And I don't read probably the high quality fiction and nonfiction things that you read, Jada. I read comic books a lot. Still, that brings me joy. I'm a cinemaphile. And so I make sure to carve out at least 3 hours a week to watch a movie. I don't like dubbed movies. I like movies in the original language with subtitles, or I like works, right? And I have a particular affinity for Black cinema. And so I try to look at things, movies that are both new, and then revisit the ones that I enjoy from the past. I think the best use of my time is actually spent, though, with my family. I have been fortunate to be married as of next month, April, at the time of this recording, for 25 years. I am fortunate that at any random time, I can get a video call from one of my two kids. And as they've transitioned into adulthood, they continue to want to talk to dad. Now it's about different stuff, but it repeatedly happens, and that brings me joy. And I think what really keeps me charged, right, keeps my battery at 100%, quite frankly, is that there are two things. Growing up, my real life superhero, so I had the comic books, but my real life superhero, in addition to my parents were incredible and a model for me and my wife, but it was Muhammad Ali, former multiple heavyweight champion of the world who faced his own challenges. What I loved about Muhammad Ali is that that man always sought to do what he thought was just. And he was never shy about speaking what he viewed as the truth, even when it wasn't comfortable for people to hear it, right? And he faced repercussions for that. I think I'm cut from that cloth. And so I'm actually energized by all the challenges we face, because if not me, then who? Someone has to be there on the front lines to fight. And someone has to feel as if they've been called and have the responsibility to lead the charge. So every day when I get up, I feel invigorated, quite frankly, not discouraged, because I know that my job, my mind, and my skills are very much needed at a time, maybe like they've never been needed before. So it's relatively easy for me to stay energized, quite frankly, because there's always something that I'm going to need to do. And then when I need to focus on something else, I have loved ones and hobbies and habits to allow me to have a little bit of a break.
Leroy, I want to first thank you, and not only for your time today, but also as someone who I consider to be one of my very own superheroes as well, someone who's inspired me and mentored and supported me over the course of my career. So I want to say thank you for that. Thank you for your time today, and offer one final opportunity for any last reflections as we wrap up our time together.
Yeah, well, my first is there's mutual admiration between the two of us. So I don't take lightly what you said, and I'm extraordinarily humbled by it. So thank you is the first thing I would say. And I think if there are any take-home points, I want all of our members, regardless of how long they've been practicing medicine and what stage they are in their career, to not be overly discouraged. There is no question that, again, risk and challenges are abound. And the assaults on all that we know help improve the lives of human beings seem to be coming from every direction. Yet, we have within us an organized body of people who are uniquely talented. And so if we don't give up the fight, we can really, you know, this too shall pass. And the real question is, in what shape is this world going to be when the change begins to occur? And I think we have to remain not only hopeful, but determined to help make sure that things don't fall into too much disrepair. And that requires activism, it requires engagement, and it requires not giving up on doing those things that we know are the best things we can do for human health. So that would be my parting shot.
Well, I want to thank you again for your thoughtful reflections today. I want to thank our audience for joining us and the SJIM staff, Roz Bogle, our executive producer, and our entire production team. Also, I want to say thank you to our listeners. You have been listening to the SJIM President's Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please rate us and leave a comment wherever you listen to podcasts, as it helps others to find us. Also, look for us on the SJIM webpage, sjim.org, and follow us on X.